Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There is no better group of plants for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, and this week it's a rather special event. Because we're celebrating 40 years of sun gardening with a little reception in the Farmers Club. Now, to set the scene, we're first floor up, looking out over Whitehall Gardens across to the London Eye. A really stunning morning, bright blue sky, and beneath us all the beds full of brightly coloured polyanthus. It really is a fantastic event. And inevitably, I'm casting my mind back a bit. My first visit to the Sun newspaper was in Bouverie Street when the type was set with heavy metal. And I well remember going up to the third floor on a cranking steel lift to meet the then features editor, Jerry Holmberg. Goodness, how things have changed. If you'd have told me then that the 500 or 600 words we submitted in black and white on a sheet of A4 on a Tuesday would change to electronic, immediate typesetting and the ability to take our own photographs, to speak to you with this podcast and, of course, communicate online, it really is a remarkable and fast-changing world. I hope in the course of today to just catch up with a few people to reflect on some of those thoughts and stories. Mustn't forget the news, of course, and a few tips for this week. Now, I've been out and about, and on one garden centre in Kent, Millbrook, I understand they've had a very successful presentation on fairy gardening. What is all this about people making little gardens with fairies? It's something I think we might have a bit of a go at Chelsea. And the garden relief that many of the people in the trade spent a Friday trying to raise money for Green Fingers, the children's hospice charity, that has been tremendously successful. And since 2012, they've raised over £500,000 to improve the gardens at these very deserving places. A quick tip too, I had an email from Chaz. Chaz Hodges of Chaz and Dave, who just had a deliver of strawy manure tipped onto his allotment, and said, would it be all right to put down heaped rows of onions? Well, with manure, if the straw will break easily when you pull it and it's brown, then yes, it's usually usable. But if the straw still has its structure and won't break, then it needs to be composted for another 2 or 3 months, really. I've just used some of that kind of material to mulch under black currants. It'll do a good job there, holding in the moisture and smothering weeds. Chris Stevens, you were my features editor for several years. Chris, you're the fellow who came up with that brilliant headline, Junior Petunia. I mean, I had a plant called Mill Floor, which really didn't sell anything very much.
Yes, well, I remember you saying we want something that's geared towards young people. And so we talked about what it was like. That sort of came into my mind, and you were saying, oh, that's brilliant, that's what we want, and went away, and that was the last I thought of it. Until a couple of weeks later, you said, they all loved it. And I told them that you'd have had to pay an advertising agency thousands of pounds to have got something like that.
And they would, yes.
And meetings, and you'd have had lunches and all that sort of thing. So they ought to give you something. Oh, I said, well, a few plants would be great, thanks very much. And anyway, the following week I was at home in Windsor, and this lorry turned up outside the house, festooned with pallets of pallets of plants. And I said, oh, that's good, you bought me a few things. And I said, yeah, which ones are mine? The guy said, they're all yours. So we're unloading the lot. And so the whole the Windsor, by the end of the week, the Windsor was ready for Britain in Bloom. Should have walked it if only they'd been not been too snooty to enter it.
Chris, you deserved it. We're still talking about Junior Petunia all those years later. Oh, another very welcome guest is the great Royals photographer, Arthur Edwards. Goodness, he's been so much help to me over the years. We have some good memories too, Arthur, don't we?
We absolutely do. We've travelled a bit and we met a few of the Royal family. And you've met them all now, Peter, I think, thanks to me.
Well, yes, you kicked it off with the visit of Prince Charles a long, long time ago. You were sent down on the Monday with the instruction to get pictures, and you were up and down Sunflower Street saying, when are the Royals coming, when are the Royals coming? And I said, they won't come here. We're the Sun newspaper, you know. The RHS doesn't really want the Sun newspaper people meeting the Royals.
And then I saw Prince Charles walking along. And sure enough, his route was not our route, and he was going everywhere but our garden. And I said, excuse me, Prince Charles, I said, why don't you come and have a look at our garden? And he looked at me and he said, oh, OK, and he came over. And Peter, of course, went into sort of Uriah Heep mode and made them very welcome. And then that year, we didn't only have the Prince of Wales, we had we had the Queen Mother, we had Princess Margaret, we had the Crown Prince of Japan, we had Chelsea Clinton. I think every super guest at the Chelsea Flower Show that day came to Sunflower Street. And we had a huge show in the paper the next day. And for many years afterwards, the Queen has made a point of coming to say hello to Peter. Now, he doesn't think so, but she knows him very well. And of course, you know, she used to watch TV years ago when Peter was a huge star on Peppermill. And of course, you know, she's got a lot to ask him about. And of course, he's got plenty to tell her.
Well, yes. And we always like a few flowers picked from the garden
to be
presented in a posy by one of our school children.
Right. Yeah. And she always, you know, all smiles. I mean, and a few years ago, I did a book for Peter. I think another great event we were celebrating in his life. And this book is like, it's like a Royals annual, you know. It's every member of the Royal family shaking hands with the great man.
I have that book, Arthur. It's one of my most treasured possessions. It shows all the visits we've made, you know, in Holland, in Belgium and across the country, on nurseries up in Lincolnshire, all kinds of places. It's a great memory prompt and I love it.
And I love doing it, Peter. You're very welcome.
Oh, and now I've got Joe Ball. Joe was the gatekeeper. If I needed to get to see the editor, there was the smiling Joe. Do you have any memories of our time at the Sun?
I have very happy memories of our time at the Sun together. I remember very specifically you coming to see me. You'd always look after my orchids, which I used to have on the windowsill, if you remember. me not being very green-fingered. And yeah, happy days, really.
It's great to get so many people who've supported me over the years, just present to go through some of those memories and recall some really good times.
Really good times. And I think the thing that was amazing for me about working at the Sun, the diversity of work. You know, there I was, a secretary in the editor's office, and yet everything from Arthur Edwards to you with the gardening to the travel desk. So every day brought something new and different.
What a privilege it is for me anyhow to go in every day and work with all those bright young people.
Totally. I that's the one thing, my abiding memory of working with people who were so intelligent and so vibrant, I think. You know, you'd walk out on that floor in the morning calling people in for conference, and a mixture of great brains and great fun.
Yes. Yeah. Sense of humour. Joe, always. It's great to see you again.
Oh,
thank you.
Well, thank you for asking me. Pleasure.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Another of our treasured guests here today is Mr. Tim Rumble, the long-standing editor of Amateur Gardening. Now, I've worked for Tim for perhaps too many years. Tim, how did you first get into the world of journalism and gardening?
I became a gardener because I loved gardening. It's a long story. I was brought up as a vegetarian. Okay. Love food. Always was interested. My mother particularly was interested in the quality of food, what it contained. Always taught us to examine food and find out the right balance of foods because she was a vegetarian. And so I was always interested in food. And so when I left home and knocked around in London and started to live on my own and tried to find food that was some sort of equivalent, it was a real struggle. So the first opportunity I got when I bought a house, I started to garden and grow veg. The first thing I did was plant veg. No idea what I was doing. Lots of disasters, lots of pest problems, lots of disease
really
problems.
Absolutely cold.
Oh,
started with
absolutely, yeah. But I just wanted to get in there and find out what it was about. I think there's something in people. There's something very, very innate that says, I want to create my own food. I want to find my own food. I want to be responsible for it. There's something quite alien about just buying it all from shops and supermarkets. So that feeling of wanting to grow food, grow plants. My father was a mad on the countryside as well. So that influence as well drew me into gardening and never looked back, you know.
But then you had a career in journalism before you got into gardening journalism.
Yes, I come from the North East. I come from North Shields. Okay, I was born and brought up in North Shields.
I don't detect that accent from North Shields.
Well, I can do it if you're late, you know. But born and brought up in North Shields, went to live in London for 3 years because there was no jobs in the North East back in the late 60s, early 70s. Huge number of jobs in London. It was the streets really were paved with gold in those days. Could do whatever you wanted. Met a young lady. She was moving to Devon, and she was a journalist. And so I went to live with her in Devon. And for the newspaper she worked for, they wanted somebody to write theatre. Now, I love theatre. So I went to review all of the touring theatres that were going on around Devon. I was doing a day job as a dustman, by the way. And in the evenings, would go off around Devon to review all of these travelling theatres.
But what a lesson for young people. You worked as a dustman to finance the early start to your journalistic career.
The key, as you will know, is that you have to earn a living.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So you were brought up with that. I was brought up with that. You have to pay your own way. It worries me slightly that young people nowadays aren't brought up that way. They feel that things are just provided. You know, when people buy a house nowadays, they want the kitchen redone, the living room redone, the bedrooms redone. When we moved into houses, they were derelict. You know, the house I'm living in now was empty. There were bare floorboards. I went in there and I did most of the jobs myself to start with. It's a different attitude. It's a different approach to living. I love being responsible for what I have and for what I do.
If you have nothing and work hard and achieve something, then you treasure what you've got.
Absolutely. You own it. Yeah.
But from Devon, Tim, then how did you get into national journalism?
Well, via motorcycles.
Oh, Crumbs, sorry. You're impossible, you are. What?
I was always a keen motorcyclist, and I'd started doing theatre reviews for the Exmouth Journal, realised that I couldn't carry on doing ordinary jobs, jobs that paid nothing, jobs that had no future, started to apply for stupid jobs, and got a job accidentally as a features editor for a motorcycling magazine in the office I'm working now as editor of Amateur Gardening.
Amazing.
Yeah, very weird. Yeah. Anyway, that lasted a year. Then I went off into local newspapers. I launched a series of free newspapers over about 3 years, and then went into the local paid-for daily, then went to a subsidiary of that company, Special Publications, which did American football, which I was vaguely interested in, and a microwave magazine and various other things. Oh, and a business paper. your career has not been unlike this, Peter.
I could call you a jack of all trades here, you know. But I want to get to London because that's where you were. A Fleet Street journalist.
Yeah, yeah. So I then went on to Special Pubs, and from there, I was applying to national newspapers for about a year, and got some interest from the Daily Star in Manchester, and they had offices in Manchester. So I took a day's holiday, and I took the train up to Manchester and spent a day working on the desk as a sub, and then took the train back. And I did that three times.
Harrison.
Yeah. And then they said, oh, well, we've got a London office. It might be more convenient for you. And they just opened the London office. And so I did three shifts up there, possibly. And I was in the office one day, and somebody walked in and said, we need three more staff. So the chief sub turned to me and said, do you want a job? So I said, yeah, okay. So then started a year and a half of drinking. Sorry, that was the old days.
I heard about that, and I think I lived through it, but I wasn't one of those who in Fleet Street from 12 o'clock till 3.
Yes.
So it really did happen,
did it? Yes, it did. And it was great fun. You were always left with a sense of, well, who is doing the job? What is going on here? But I would turn up. We had a contract which allowed me 3 days off a week, so I worked 4 days a week. And 4 days a week, I'd turn up, and the chief sub would say, you go downstairs and buy the first round. And then at 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, you would stagger off to the station and go home. And that was your day's work.
Really?
Yes.
So who wrote the copy? Come on.
I think there were some freelancers in Manchester. Sorry.
I remember at the Sun, we had, I think, 3,000 staff in Fleet Street. And when we moved, first of all, down to Wapping, six people produced a paper one evening.
Yes. Yeah. You know, from the point of view of an employee, of course, you do what you're told. You know, you do what your boss says. My boss was the chief sub, so I did what the chief sub said. And if he said, go and get a round of drinks, I went and got a round of drinks.
So it must have been quite a change when you went into Amateur Gardening as an editor. Now, that's a different world, isn't it?
It was. I spent 11 years on Fleet Street. I spent 8 years with the Star and then 3 years jobbing around. I'd been looking around for other things, and Chief Sub came up on Amateur Gardening magazine. Being a gardener, loving gardening as a hobby, I thought, oh, well, I can do that, you know, bit of gardening, you know, feet up on the desk, I'll do a bit of gardening, write a couple of stories and spend the weekend gardening. You know, that sounds great to me. So I applied for the job and got it, gave them my notice and left. And that was the next day because it was a day contract, effectively. So then I started with Amateur Gardening, and I was working 12 hours a day. So much for putting my feet up, you know. Just getting my head around stuff, getting writing the way it should have been. There were a lot of horticulturists, non-journalists, working on the paper.
And we're not very good at writing copy, are we?
Well, I'm sure that you are, Peter, and I know that you are. You write for us regularly, but there were plenty of horticulturists who wanted to express something and weren't really very able to do it. So what you had to do was try and whittle down maybe 200 words into a couple of sentences, and that could be hard work, you know.
Yeah, but your newspaper experience would do that.
That's exactly what
I remember at the Sun. My instruction when I started. You know, I want to know how, why, where, or when.
Yeah.
Five words a sentence, two sentences a paragraph, and if you can't tell me all of that in five paragraphs, don't waste my time.
It's absolutely true. There are so many writers, and they're interesting and entertaining to read, but they just talk around the point. They don't tell you what you want to know. And I think a good journalist tells you what you want to know with a bit of dressing. You know, that dressing is what carries you through, and it gives it the story character, but you want the facts. The facts are the important thing, and so many writers forget that.
Now, Gardener's World is looking for the plant which created the greatest influence over the past 50 years. Well, with your 18 years at amateur gardening, what would you think is the development which you think has had the greatest influence on gardens and gardeners?
That's very difficult. I've always loved brassicas. I've always loved cabbages, largely because I like eating them. But the diversity of brassicas is extraordinary. You know, we have flowering plants that are brassicas. We have a huge range of edible plants that are brassicas. And I just love brassicas. So I would say, for me, what made me passionate about gardening was being able to grow my own brassicas. You know, I love them. I think the differentiation between veg and ornamental plants is nonsense. If you look at a good veg plot, anyone who loves plants will just be swallowed up by a good veg plot. I've seen your veg plot, Peter. I know how good that looks, and I know how you care about it, so I know you feel the same way. If you love plants, it doesn't matter whether it's ornamental, it doesn't matter whether it's a veg, you're just sucked in. You've got to be there, yeah?
Tim, in your retirement from AG, I say thank you very much for those of us who contribute, and I'm sure for the readers. And I think perhaps we should call you Mr. Greens.
Love that, Peter. Thank you very much.
Well, today's been quite a day, one way and another. So many good friends, a number I haven't seen for a good many years. We've swapped some stories, I've learned a few new things too, and I hope you've enjoyed listening to some of these experiences. Well, my thanks to Mr. Fothergill Seeds for sponsoring this podcast, and thank you for listening. We'll be back next Thursday.